All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado, Tony Pentecal.
And Psychic Tom Padgett. Still with a little bit of laryngitis after the big fight card Saturday night.
Yeah. Wow. Mr. Cookie Monster did not do so well, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard he got kind of smoked.
WWE fans who wanted him to do so, do pretty decent. He got smoked in the first round, yeah. Tapped out, I believe. That was one of the ones where I was watching at the beginning, and then I had the Fritz on the feed, so I come back in, and he's already tapped out. Done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did see him take a few punches before that, and he was totally outclassed. And I thought it was very interesting that Mickey Gall came out after the fight and said he felt very pressured by the MMA community to make an example of Phil Brooks. It's his fighting name. No, that's his real name.
That was genius.
Yeah. So, you know, and then Dana White comes out afterwards and says, oh, yeah, the Phil Brooks experiment is over. And it wasn't really an experiment. He was a friend of mine, he said. And then you add to the fact that all this controversy without the fact that what he got paid for this fight. And he got, like, same as what Brock Lesnar used to get paid for fighting in the UFC. And he's obviously not as big a talent or name as Brock Lesnar. But I think he got $500,000, I want to say. I don't have the number right in front of me, so I could be wrong. But so a lot of people were pissed about that. And as Tom mentioned last week, they had to give him a waiver to fight in Cleveland. But so the big story, obviously, is Stipe, Tom's boy, just totally wiped out the competition there in Alistair Overeem. And to this day, I just do not understand how this guy gets such power on such short-range punches. I mean, maybe you can fill me in, Tom. Maybe you know more about him because he's from your area.
Well, I know that the boy did work with him. And I think he must have absorbed some of their lessons. And I thought did you catch the whole fight, Rich?
I did see that whole fight, yes. It was amazing. Amazing short-range power.
Early on, it was just collective, when he went down with that straight left hand, that looked awful. And, you know, when you knock someone down, your choice is to either go for a submission or a ground and pound. And if he would have put Stipe on his back, I think Overeem would have got on his chest, and that would have been disastrous. But instead, Stipe was still sitting up, so Overeem did the smart thing, put the guillotine on. But he didn't have position. And you notice how he pulled back. And he was trying to pull guard. Yeah. Had he pulled guard, the fight very well may have. But what saved Stipe was Overeem got one leg behind his back, and Stipe obviously knew this was coming, because I know his jiu-jitsu coach is good, because he could take a no-talent guy like me and help me. We have the same coach. And Stipe was able to just move his hips, get to side control, and then switch right out. And that was, at that point, everyone got a much better feeling about what was going to happen. And still, it was touch and go there for a while, though. Overeem was in that fight all the way until he wasn't.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you, though, that just kickboxing is a different world. I mean, this guy comes from Glory. He's a big, you know, big deal there. He's had a lot of fights, a lot of wins there. He comes into the UFC and just roller coaster for him. Ups and downs, ups and downs. And it just never got a rhythm going. So, to me, it's like, you know, styles make fights, they say, but it just belays the whole premise of, hey, you know, this is what MMA is becoming. It's a striker's game. And, you know, I've been saying that for years, is that, you know, as long as you have takedown defense and can keep it off the ground and have good boxing skills in MMA, you can dominate. You can truly dominate. You know, hands are so important.
And add to the fact that Stipe had the takedown ability, that if the fight went to the ground, he would be on top.
Right.
Because I'm not privy to this, but I would bet just about everything I have that that was the strategy. Because you don't want to play the guard game against a guy as powerful as Overeem. And Stipe executed it good, got that check, took it down, and that was it.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show. And then, of course, we cannot forget boxing. There was a big, big boxing match over the weekend, and I did watch it, believe it or not. I mean, different time zones and, you know, over across the pond, as they say, and still a boxing match. And I haven't watched boxing in forever, but I've been into this fight. Watching it on
Triple G on
Skippy Feed. And Kell Brook, I mean, he actually reminded me of a guy I do some woodwork with, some tree work, because he's a stocky animal. It's crazy. He just goes in there and he goes nuts. And one of the punches that was landed for him was the uppercut. But he just couldn't always get the right range. And Golovkin, he really showed endurance in this fight more than anything. I mean, here's this guy, Kell Brook, throwing everything but the kitchen sink at him, not really concentrating on defense. And Golovkin just weathered the storm, had patience, and just picked him apart like I have never seen in a boxing match. Obviously, we talked about this before this fight, and I think one of us said, hey, you know, this is a guy who has no experience against big names, so I don't think he's going to do too well here. And talk about Brook, and that's exactly what happened. Golovkin has faced people that people didn't expect him to, and here comes Kell Brook, undefeated, but he never really faced that big name. First time he does, it just doesn't work out well, and I don't think there's ever been another fight where the towel throwing in was so long. He's shaking the towel in front of the ref.
Wasn't that awful? Oh.
Back and forth. Hey, we're winning.
Yeah. You know what? Going back to the fight, what I found it kind of funny, but I knew a few people that were commenting online that were picking Kell Brook to win, and maybe because, and they're Kell Brook to win more like they were anti-Triple G. You know, they weren't saying, you know, Kell Brook's going to win because of his skills or whatever. They were more saying, oh, Triple G's hyped up and he's this and he's that. He's no haggler. Well, who is right now? You know, he is no haggler yet. But Kell Brook is no Sugar Ray Leonard. And so the fight gets stopped and you go back and you look at it. Maybe a little, you could consider it premature. But the corner knew that having trouble with his vision, he was starting to take some pretty heavy punches. He'd already been down in the first round and hurt pretty bad. And he took some clean punches in that fifth round. And this corner knew he's fading a little bit. He has no chance of winning. Let's pull him out now and save him for another day. And, I mean, yeah, you could say it was premature, but they knew. You know, we have to save our fighter from himself.
Thank you.
yeah, because, you know, and I always go back to the Gabriel Ellis-Jimmy Garcia fight in 95 when he was beating the hell out of this poor boy, and they let the fight continue till he, you know, passed away from his injuries. You know, there was no reason to let this fight go any further. He was starting to take a pretty good beating.
Right, and the corner, when you train with someone day in and day out, you live with them, you know them as well as their family. I mean, I think anyone that's complaining about that is just, I don't understand the hate for Triple G. I mean, he never trash talks his opponent. He seems like a gentleman. He's very talented. I can't understand all that animosity toward him.
You know, well, I will tell you a couple of people that I read a lot of their stuff on, and I don't like to say this, but trying to think of the most politically correct way to say this. Because his pigmentation is too light.
Because what?
He's white.
His pigmentation
is
too light.
Actually, it's kind of funny.
Well,
that
he's half Korean.
there's a friend of mine who does woodwork every now and then, but he's a tall dude. You know, he kind of looks like Kovalev. He actually has the same birthday as Kovalev. But I said to him one day, "You remind me a little bit of." I taught him a couple punches, and he was hitting the bag in my shed. And I said, "You know, you remind me of Vladimir Klitschko the way you throw the jab." So, he got into boxing after that on his own without me being involved at all. And his favorite fighter now is Triple G. And he'll like shoot me shit on Facebook all the time just about Triple G. He's like obsessed with this guy. And he's not even a boxing fan. So, I mean, obviously he has a draw for some people. Some people like him. But, I mean, I don't have a good or bad feeling about him. I just think it's impressive the way he's...
I enjoy watching him fight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and anyone that grew up on horse milk, I just can't keep that out of my head. I mean, it's just... have you guys heard who his next opponent is?
No.
I have not.
You remember who won a fight against Sergio Moro, okay, just recently?
Daniel Jacobs.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow. Supposedly that.
Really?
Hard. Yes.
Great.
You can't argue with a psychic.
What, here's one thing that really concerns me on that fight is Jacobs' chin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just something about
I'm anxious. I'm definitely anxious to see it. I think Jacobs is going to make a good run at it.
I think the one thing that stands out about him, especially after watching him this last fight, is just he's just got such good discipline with his punches and choices of which punch to throw and when, and he maximizes his power like you wouldn't believe. And actually, talking about power, I don't know if you guys caught any of the Glory on ESPN. Actually, showed some Glory fights this weekend. And it was this guy, Matt Abel or something like that, I think his name was. And Rocky Marciano all the way. I mean, the crouch, he's in the crouch. He throws the right hand just like Rocky threw and knocked this guy out clean. Like, out, dropped to his backside. This is the second time he knocked him down in the round. I think it was Matt Abel or something like that. I never even seen anything like that except for Rocky. So I just wanted to mention that. That was a heck of a knockout. But Gennady, he's one of those guys where it's just like every punch has a purpose. And there's not too many guys left in boxing like that these days. So I think his star is going to rise just as long as he keeps doing that to people. And the UK actually has such a healthy fan base for boxing right now that, you know, him beating a big-time UK guy is a huge deal, especially in his own backyard. You just don't do that. But you notice he didn't want it to go to decision either. He was really trying to knock him out, and he did pretty much. I mean, the corner threw in the towel, but it was inevitable. Before that,
well, I picked up a lot of respect for Book because with all these other people ducking him and saying that they want to fight Triple G until the contract is presented, and then they priced themselves out of it, Book had no hesitation. And, well, I understand, before the fight he even said after that, he's willing to step in with Errol Spence. Let's do that.
Yeah.
So, sure
has
won my respect.
It's going to be a confidence boost. But at the same time, you also have to remember what we said from the beginning. It's that this guy does not have experience against big names, so don't let your head get too big. But, I mean, he's just got talent, bottom line. He is just an unbelievable talent. And, you know, for that little frame of his, he has a hell of a lot of power. You don't usually see in those weights, but somehow he has perfected it. But it would be nice to see Floyd come out of retirement to fight him. That's about the only one I think could beat him at this point. Anyway, we do have some big UFC bouts coming up. We got UFC Fight Night coming up. We've got Bellator 161 tomorrow night. I did have an opportunity to interview Joe Warren, but I was up in Maine, and they say, all right, the interview is going to be Wednesday at this time. Then the night before, they say, oh, we're going to change it to this time. So I send a notice back, hey, I'm supposed to go out for dinner at that to do it at a later date. And then, so they call me at the original time while I'm at dinner. I'm like, yeah, I can't do it right now. But you know, I was supposed to get Joe Warren on the show. He is in the co-main event of Bellator 161. Tomorrow night. We'll have to do a rain check on that one, I guess. But, we'll try to get in with Bellator. I think we'll get a lot of guys if we do get some decent interviews out there. But I think the last guy we had on from Bellator was, drawing a blank now, but guy who ended up taking a couple of losses his first time out, but he was undefeated going in to that first fight in Bellator a few months ago. Anyway, Czech Congo will be fighting Tony Johnson tomorrow night in the main event. And Czech Congo is probably the most built guy in MMA with the least amount of skill to back it up. I hate to say that about any professional. I mean, you've got there. You're a professional. But I hate to watch this guy fight sometimes because he is just so ripped, but he does nothing with it. And he's tall, lanky. He's got reach.
We'll find out tomorrow, Rich. Maybe he's evolved.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Maybe. I mean, he's mostly wrestling every time I've seen him. The one fight that really showed his knockout power was a heavyweight fight he fought in the UFC. Drawing a blank on the guy's name he fought. But, you know, pretty big dude. And he knocked him out after he was stunned. Czech was stumbling all over the cage and then ended up hitting this dude with an uppercut and just, I think it was Pat Barry, now that I think of it. It's on the 100 Greatest Knockouts tape because it's like, you think Czech's going down and then all of a sudden he recovers and just lands this beautiful uppercut. Lays Pat Barry out on his face. Unbelievable. And, of course, you got to call it there, you know. When a guy's wobbled, you give him a few minutes to get back to it. But he hit Pat Barry with the uppercut from hell. But now he's in Bellator, and, you know, it's a big fish in a small pond. So he's been doing pretty well there. But he's fighting a guy, Tony Johnson, this time out, who's 10-2. Czech is 24-10-2. This is a real journeyman's record in the sport. He doesn't really have, you know, belt potential. He hasn't had a belt in a while, but yeah, he's an interesting fighter to watch. I'll give him that. But just, I've never seen somebody more ripped who doesn't use it. There's like not an ounce of fat on this guy's body. You'd think he'd just be rolling over people, just destroying people, but he doesn't. And I, especially with the striking, I think he's got a background in the French sabate shit. That's when he got him started. So it just doesn't make sense to me why he wouldn't use his arms and his legs and his hands more. But we'll see. We'll see if he's evolved, as Tom says. But co-main event is Joe Warren, 13-5. Coming in off a couple tough bouts there with the belt on the line. That he lost the belt. He had the belt for a little while. Calls himself the most dangerous man in the world. But hasn't quite been so lately. We'll see. Sir Juan Kakai is his opponent. He's 12-4. Then we got a female fight on the main card. Anastasia Yang is 2-0. And we got Derek Campos, 16-6, fighting Jamil Chan, who is 12-2. Nick Gonzalez, 18-12, fighting Warren Stewart, who's 11-22. Wow.
Ouch. Ouch.
They have opponents in MMA. He doesn't even have a Sherdog picture either, so. Goes to show you what his talent level is.
He must have been one of those PBAs until a week ago.
33 professional fights, and they don't even have the decency to give you a Sherdog picture. That's horrible. I tell you, if I ever become professional, I am sending Sherdog my picture.
Yes, sir.
I want to make sure they got that shit. We also have a pretty unstacked preliminary card. Go down to Nick Gonzalez, 18-12. Well, we just said that one. Kenya Miranda Da Silva, that's another female fight. She's 2-2 versus Emily Ducote, who is 3-1. And we got the last big fight on this card. We got Mark Dickman, 11-2 versus Daniel Pineda, who's 21-12. And we got a bunch of 0-0s versus 0-0s, a 1-0 versus an 0-1. And to lead off the card, that's actually a pretty interesting bout here against some guys who have some experience. Ray Trujillo, 19-17 versus James King, who's 15-17. That'll be a decent one. And then, of course, we've got the UFC card. That's Saturday night. Is it Saturday night the 17th? Poirier versus Johnson. Dustin Poirier versus Dennis Johnson. Dennis, of course, the menace, he calls himself. From The Ultimate Fighter, brought up through there. And Dustin's just a guy who's fought anybody who's anybody in the sport. And Johnson says he's a new man after shoulder surgery, so we'll have to see how that works out for him. But, Dustin is no joke. He is 20-4. Johnson is 16-10. I do believe Dustin has a little bit more UFC experience, though, because Johnson's only been around for a couple years in UFC. The co-main event is pretty heated, too. The guys are going back and forth with some trash talk. Derek Brunson and Uriah Hall. And Uriah Hall is probably best known for the most brutal knockout in the Ultimate Fighter's history against this dude. He just hit him with a spinning back kick, and the heel just hit him right in the chin. Knocked him out cold instantly. And Dana White has even been on record as saying this, that that's the best knockout he's ever seen, period. Never mind Ultimate Fighter or anything, period. So it's pretty intense. But Brunson's 15-3. We got Evan Dunham also on this card. He is 17-6, fighting Rick Glenn, who's 18-3. Alejandro Perez, 17-6, fighting Albert Morales, who is 6-0. We got Roan Carnero, 20-10, fighting Kenny Robertson, who's 15-4. Chris Wade, no, not that Chris Wade, 11-2, fighting Islam Makhachev, who is 12-1. And we got Sam Sicilian, the fifth fighter tonight. He is 15-6, fighting Gabriel Benitez, who's 18-5. We got Bilal Muhammad, 9-1, fighting Augusto Montano, who is 15-2. Joey Gomez in the third fight of the night. He is 6-1, fighting Jose Alberto Quinones, who is 4-2. Randy Brown, 7-1, fighting Eric Montano, who is 7-3. I guess Augusto and Eric must be brothers or something. Fighting on the same card. Same last name. Antonio Carlos Jr. in the second fight of the night. He is 5-2, fighting Leonardo Guimarães, who is 11-2. And in the first fight of the night, Maximo Blanco, who is 12-7-1, will be fighting Chaz Skelly, who is 15-2. So that'll be a decent one to watch. I hope it's not on Fight Pass, because the last one on Fight Pass I totally missed, because it was in Germany. And the time difference definitely threw me off there, but the Golovkin one I at least knew to look for earlier, so I did catch that on the old interwebs, as they call them. The big fight, obviously, this weekend is Saul Alvarez versus Liam Smith. That's the big boxing match. And to tell you the truth, if there wasn't a belt on the line, I don't think Liam Smith would be getting this opportunity. Because I never heard of him. I don't know if you've seen or heard of him, Tony. But.
I haven't. You know, that's why I really didn't want to write a preview on this one, because I don't know much on the ground.
And obviously, Saul is kind of Saul Canelo Alvarez, as his full name is. Full name and nickname.
Is Canelo back with HBO, or is he still on Showtime? Because I haven't seen the preview or anything like that, so I wonder how they're hiding it. Be interesting.
Well, I mean, he's obviously he's not a welterweight anymore. He's middleweight, but super middleweight, I think, is this fight. But you know, he's obviously trying to take the place of Floyd Mayweather, being the best pound for pound boxer out there. But I've always found his style kind of lumbering. And, you know, very little defense and more about just all power. Just trying to overwhelm people. And I don't know anything about Liam Smith, but remember, we didn't know anything about Joe Smith either. Remember Joe Smith Jr.? Just came out of nowhere and got his belt. So, you know, we never know with these people and their talent level when they come in, but. Should be interesting. I'm going to try to watch it anyway. We also got a big bout in Germany for the vacant WBO European Cruiserweight title. Nuri Safiri, he's 37-7 at cruiserweight, fighting Ferhat Arslan, who is 37-8-2. That's in Germany, I believe, tomorrow night. Friday. Nope, this is Saturday. All Saturday. Okay. I mean, I do Friday night fights. Box Rec has taken me to Saturday. So straight to Saturday. We got a light heavyweight bout also on this card in Germany. Vacant WBA International light heavyweight title on the line. Karo Murat is in this bout. He's 29-3-1, fighting Yevgeny Martienko, who is 8-4. I guess that's a tune-up fight for Karo for the title. Even though it's a vacant title, that's kind of crazy. 8-4 versus 29-3-1. I don't know if that's quite the mismatch of the week, but that's pretty bad. Hopefully, I mean, there's that one guy that's the Russian dude who's like 4-something, and he's unbelievable. But that's just because he had a shitload of amateur fights. I don't know about this Yevgeny dude, but 8-4 versus 29-3-1. I don't think many people are going to be betting on Yevgeny in that one. Also, the vacant WBA International Heavyweight titles on the line between a couple guys who are much better matches for each other. Manuel Char, 29-4, and Sefer Safiri, 21-0 at heavyweight. Those are the two best ones on that one. We got another one in Germany for two light heavyweight titles. Dominic Bosel, 22-0, fighting Tony Averland, who is 24-8-2 for the WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight title and the WBA Continental Light Heavyweight title. And co-main event there is Felix Lam, 12-1-1 at super lightweight, fighting Andrea Carbonello. Andrea. How do you get it? How is a guy named Andrea? I don't know that. Andrea Carbonello. It's Italian, Tony. What's the story there?
I know.
13.
Maybe it's like
1-1. Andrea.
I don't know. Maybe it's like way of saying it. You know.
He is fighting for the vacant WBO European super lightweight title there. And we got another couple vacant titles on the line in Hungary. A couple guys are hungry for the title. Imre Zello, 13-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Hamilton Ventura, who's 15-3-1 for the WBO Intercontinental cruiserweight title. Then we got Richard Baranyi, 16-1 at light heavyweight, fighting Georgi Berishvili, who's 27-11-2 for the vacant WBO European light heavyweight title. You know, when you're in the bathroom, European.
Yes, you are.
Italy. Oh, here's a mismatch of the week, sort of. Of guys 4-0, Diego Di Luisa, 4-0 at middleweight, fighting Giuseppe Rosseo, who is 28-3.
Ouch. Who are those two question?
Yeah, those two guys who he beat must be pissed. Absolutely pissed. Let's see. Going over to Poland. Yeah, there's an interesting one in Poland for the WBO World Cruiserweight title this Saturday. Krzysztof Głowacki. Very well-known name at cruiserweight, 26-0, fighting Alexander Usyk, who is 9-0. The WBO World Cruiserweight title in Poland. And we got the co-main event, Patrick Szymanski. He is 16-0 at super welterweight, fighting for the WBC Youth Super Welterweight title. There's Jose Antonio Villalobos, who is 9-1-2. And if that ain't enough, we got a very good heavyweight matchup here between Andrzej Worzyk, who is 32-1 at heavyweight, and Albert Sosnowski, who is 49-7-2. Lots of fights there between those two. And Jesus Fight of the Week is in Puerto Rico. Go figure. Caguas, Puerto Rico is the only fight on the card. Jesus M. Rojas, he is 23-1-2 at featherweight, fighting Jesus A. Valdez, who is 16-1. All I know is Jesus is going to win. I think this is the first. Jesus fighting Jesus. for the vacant WBO Latino featherweight title. And the Jesus title.
Come on, Jesus. Right. Jesus, you're dropping your left hand. You talking to me?
What are you going to yell if you guys losing? Jesus Christ. that's too funny. Dude, that's definitely a first. I don't ever remember Jesus versus Jesus, ever. And for a title. That's definitely.
Yeah, hopefully the announcer can pronounce their last name okay. Because sometimes the announcers will use the first name, and that would be a little tad bit confusing in that one.
And then there's one in Russia that our buddy with the belt. John Scully would love this one. Here's a welterweight fight. Guy who's 4-1-1 fighting against a guy who's 23-6. Baksram Piazov. He's 23-6 fighting Vladislav Baranov, who's 4-1-1. This is in Russia, of course. For the vacant WBC, CIS, and Slovenian Boxing Bureau welterweight title. What the fuck is that? That's nuts. I don't think I've heard one like that before. That's new. Brand new. Ooh. Christian Leitz fighting this weekend. Talking about opponents. Fighting over in the United Kingdom, of course. Luke Evans, 3-0 at super lightweight, fighting Christian Leite. He is 12-228-7. Ew, 228 losses. How is that happening? That's tough. It's a tough record to defend.
I mean, you kind of wonder what his corner thinks about this. I mean, I just don't know what to say.
We got a fight in Butler, Pennsylvania. You know where that is, Tom? Tony? Yeah, fucking you guys.
That's closer to Pittsburgh, isn't it?
I don't know, but Brian Minto is on the card. He's 41-11. It's the only fight on the card. At Kelly Automotive Park in Butler, Pennsylvania. He's fighting a guy named Gayula Bozai, who is 15-8-4. So I'm betting on Minto on that one.
Minto's a tough kid.
Yeah. I don't know if we ever interviewed him, but I want to say we did. Anyway.
I don't think we did.
And then the big, big, big card this weekend actually features a former guest of ours on the card, Luis Orlando De Valle. You know how to pronounce it now because I butchered it a couple times. But anyway, he is 22-2 fighting Diego De La Hoya, who is, I believe, a cousin or nephew of Oscar.
Nephew.
Yeah, he's 15-0 undefeated, of course. Probably had a lot of hand-picked opponents. Probably never ran into a guy like Luis. And we're going to be rooting for De Valle because we never interviewed Diego. So, fuck him. Luis. Yeah, we're going to see Luis stomp him out. That's for the WBC Youth World Super Bantamweight title, too. And then we got a lot of titles, actually, on the line in this card. We got Eddie Gomez fighting at welterweight against Dario Furman. Both of them have one loss. Eddie has 19 wins. Dario has 13. And it's for the IBF North American welterweight title. And then we got the co-co main event for the NABF featherweight title. Joseph Diaz, 21-0 at featherweight, fighting Andrew Cancio, 17-3-2. Then the co-main event is for the vacant WBO Intercontinental middleweight title. Gabriel Rosado, 23-9, versus Willie Monroe Jr., who is 20-2. And then there's 47 again. 47-1-1. Saul Alvarez fighting Liam Smith, 23-0-1, for the WBO World Super Welterweight title. And that is Liam's title. So this is a big deal. Well, I guess I thought he was middleweight. I guess Saul's coming down to super welterweight for this one. I could have sworn, though, I was watching ESPN last night, and they had a preview. I could have sworn they said it was for Liam Smith's middleweight title, but maybe I'm wrong. Boxrec is right, I guess. When it's in writing, it's hard to disagree with. All right, so Saul Alvarez versus Liam Smith. He's 23-0. Smith, 23-0-1. Got one draw versus Saul Alvarez, who's 47-1-1. And I'm not sure. It says super welterweight, but I thought Alvarez was more of a middleweight. But I guess he's trying to get all the belts. But it is Liam Smith's belt. I do believe I did see that on ESPN last night. It's Liam's belt. It's not Saul's belt. We also have a pretty interesting fight card down in Danville, Virginia. We got Pedro Rodriguez at heavyweight. He's 22-2, fighting Stacy Frazier. I don't know if he's any relation to Joe. But it's spelled the same way. He is 16-20. Obviously doesn't have the skill of Joe. That's the last fight listed on last big fight listed on BoxRec for Saturday. Let's see if we got anything 16th. That's decent. You know, guys, I'm missing Donald Trump down there in the for the show tonight, so I hope you appreciate it.
I'm gonna be able to run Hillary Clinton show. Yeah. I'm going to
joke you. Well, I get sick if I go to a Hillary Clinton rally.
Hey, I understand Donald's quite a big fight fan. Maybe we can get him on as a guest.
Yeah, you know, actually...
Well, I mean, you think that we made each other a lot of money.
It was funny because I kind of did like try to get involved in the campaign early on, but as things went on and as he had his beef with the father of the soldier there who got killed in Iraq or Afghanistan, whatever it was. I just kind of lost interest in Mr. Trump. And, I do like the fact that he shakes up the establishment. That's one of the things I really like about him. But at the same time, I just kind of wonder, is this whole thing a publicity stunt for him? Is this just to improve his brand, win or lose? Does he really take it seriously? Is it all about entertainment? Or is he really going to do this shit? Because if he really gets elected, do you really think this guy is going to build a fucking wall between us and Mexico? I don't think it's ever going to happen. It's impossible. They can't build a fence.
I said this 8 years ago. I know a lot of people were like, especially that I worked with, were so excited when Obama got elected for the first time. And I said, you got to understand something. A president really can try to push a lot of things. But for the most part, if they don't have the support of Congress and the Senate,
they can't do
it. So a lot of the things that Trump says he wants to do, unfortunately, never happen because they'll never get enough support. But at the same time, he is the one that, you know, is trying to put America first. You know, not bringing over, you know, make all the illegals automatic citizens and give them welfare and benefits. And at the same time, in free health care and all that good stuff. And then at the same time, he's the one that's trying to, you know, not say, hey, we're going to bring over 65,000, you know, Syrians, you know, and foot the bill for them. He's saying, you know, hey, maybe we should take care of our veterans first.
Yeah, I do like that he's pro-veteran and pro, you know, soldier and all that, but at the same time, I just wonder, like, how much of this shit is just total bullshit just to see how far he can go, and how much is this really being sincere? So, and then, you know, he's sending a lot of emails out, like, oh, have a chance to have coffee with Ivanka Trump for a $3 donation. I'm like, really? You're selling raffle tickets to have fucking coffee with your daughter to get money for your
I'm trying to win dinner.
I don't know. I mean, and then there was the one moment, was my favorite moment of all of the whole Trump thing, was when he goes out after one of the debates and the Fox News guy gets to him first, of course. So he said, how do you think you did? And it's like 5 minutes after the thing ends. All the polls say that I won the debate. He said, what polls. Did they do an instant poll like 2 seconds after the debate that you got wind of?
I haven't heard it. Off topic, guys, on something completely different. Did you guys get the photo I texted to you last week?
I'm not sure. What was it?
No?
I guess not.
All right, I emailed you one picture about 20 minutes ago, and I'm going to email you another. All right. Or did I email you? Yeah, I emailed you one picture, and I'm going to email you another.
All right, we do have a couple worth mentioning, of course, Friday Night Fights. I just want to mention this one, and I can get to it here. Luis Garcia, fighting in Tampa, Florida. He's 14-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Edson Roberto dos Santos Borges. He has 35 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws at cruiserweight. So that should be a pretty decent fight. And a couple guys in their pro debuts in the co-main event there. So kind of tells you what the rest of the card looks like. That is the main draw there. Then we got Cosmopolitan, one of my favorite places to watch a fight in Las Vegas. They've got a big event going on Friday night. Ishe Smith fighting there at super welterweight. He is 28-8, fighting Frank Galarza, who is 17-1-2. We got Dominique Dolton. He is 17-0-1, fighting Justin Deloach, who is 15-1. That's at super welterweight. And we got Jaleon Love. This must be a Floyd Mayweather involved card, because that's all his guys. He is 22-1 at super middleweight, fighting Deshaun Johnson, who is 21-19-3. So obviously kind of a journeyman opponent there. Tune-up fight for Jaleon. And then we've got Sharif Bulgare. He is 28-1, fighting Luis Eduardo Flores, who's 21-4. So that's super lightweight. And if that's not enough, we got Alexis Santiago. He is 21-3-1, fighting Jose Cayetano, who is 19-4. And a couple other interesting bouts. Lionel Bellows, 16-1-1 at super middleweight, fighting DeCarlo Perez, who's 15-5-1. And Lionel Thompson, he is 16-4 at light heavyweight, fighting Donovan George, who is 25-5-2. That's a big one there. Did we drop anybody again? Yes, we did.
Okay, let's try it again.
All right, maybe we can finish. Let's go. Ending on this broadcast. Well, that's it for Friday night anyway on boxing. Tony? Got you? Hello? Can you hear me now?
I can.
All right, there he is. All right, so actually that's kind of it. But, Tony, obviously you went to the fights last week. We haven't even talked about it, right?
I know. So I was waiting for you to recap last week's fights, and then we start this week.
Yeah, we kind of went right to the schedule without going to the results.
Yeah, well, I just sent you, I emailed you guys a picture from last week's fights, and I told you I would do. I went up and I was talking to one of our former guests, Antonio Tarver.
Nice.
And I got a photo with him, and like I said, when I saw him there, I was like, hey, you were a guest on our show, you know, a year or so ago, and I said, I was the guy that started off the interview with, you got any excuses tonight, and he goes, oh my God. How you guys doing? You know, it was really cool, and we did the interview. We did the photo, and then I sent you another photo from what I did on Monday.
Nice.
But going back to the fight from last week, it was a great fight card. There were a total of 11 fights on the card. And even though that the card was in Reading, PA, it felt like I was in Toledo, Ohio. Because that's where the fan club and the family and friends of Robert Easter Jr., I was sitting right with them. And talk about a fun group of people. You know, it was a battle undefeated, Robert Easter, and gentleman by the name, I don't have the first name in front of me, but Tommy. What was it? Oh, I got the program. Richard Tommy from Ghana. And those two, I mean, went at it. And yeah. I mean, a lot of ebbs and flows in that fight. Tom, what did you think on the decision?
That, you know, that's one of those fights. I'm glad I wasn't a judge, but, man, that was close. That was close.
You know what? And looking the way it was scored, it was a split decision, and Kami had that flash knockdown, I think, around the seventh round. Mm-hmm. And so one judge had Easter up pretty comfortably going into the last round because he won 115-112. Now, Easter won the last round, clearly. So he had it, Easter up by 2 points going into the last round. And then it was, and then he went on, he was up 105 to 103. And then he won that round, and he gets a 3-point win. The other judge had Kami up by 2 points going into that last round, that being 104 to 104. And because then when Ethan won that round, it was 114 to 113, the knockdown being the difference. The third judge had it dead even. 104 to 104 going into that last round. So whoever wins that round wins the fight. And Easter won. He clearly won that last round. He hurt Kami. At first I thought he had knocked him down. He didn't. It looked like so close that his glove had touched. But you're right. It was one of those fights. There was a lot of ebbs and flows. There was, you know, when Easter boxed, he did so well. You know, he used his jab. He kept it on the end. But then Kami was really putting a lot of pressure on. And you're right. I wouldn't want to be a judge in that fight.
I didn't watch it, but I did. I got to give myself credit. I did watch one boxing match this week. It's more than I usually do.
And the main Jacobs just, you know, annihilated Sergio Mora. Mora was in retreat from the beginning, and Jacobs put the pressure on, knocked him down like five times, and it was a good stoppage.
Yeah, I did read about that one. Didn't watch it, but I did read about it. All right, so I don't know if you guys got anything else to add, but I think that's all the news.
Well, when you get a chance, check out the photos I sent you, and let me know what you think.
Oh, cannot forget this one. You guys obviously are familiar with Ricky Hatton, right? Ricky Hatton has had some, a couple bad run-ins lately with some personal issues, some drugs, some violence. So he's hanging out on this Spanish island, I think it was over the last weekend, and it gets into a little argument with a guy at a bar. So now he's being investigated by the cops. He and his buddies broke this guy's jaw, nose, and wrist in a bar brawl. And it's not even about boxing. It's about football, not NFL football, the European football.
Oh, it was really violent.
So something was said about Manchester United, and the hitman lost his mind. And he's on holiday. He's supposed to be hanging out. They got pictures of him with girls with no bras on, hanging out by the pool. And he manages to get himself in a bar brawl. And they got pictures of this dude that he fucked up. He is a mess. He's in his hospital bed. He looks like he's got three teeth. He's got a swollen nose. Blood all over his shirt. Yeah, he got messed up. And speaking of the number 47, 47 years old. Hatton, of course, 10 years younger. He was sitting, this guy was sitting next to Hatton and a man who claimed to be Hatton's cousin. And he told the newspaper that interviewed him, "I said for a bit of banter, are you ready for the football match tomorrow? You're going to see some good football," as it was the first game of the season for United. He said, "I was having a laugh, but Hatton made a face to a pal beside him who started shoving me. He gave dirty looks and said about me." Steven's wife and son went back to their apartment, but he stayed to finish his drink. And then as he went to leave, apparently Hatton's cousin attacked him. And we lost Tony and Tom again. All right, so Steven, the victim of this attack, his wife commented as well about Hatton beating the crap out of him. She said it was horrendous. He just kept punching down into Steven's face and head. Our son was standing in the street watching all this happen. I thought my husband was going to die. Hatton was drunk and never said a word before, during, or after the attack. Steven of Manchester spent 4 days in the hospital after the alleged attack on August 13th. A Spanish police spokesman said that Hatton was fully identified but not arrested following the alleged incident. He added that a police report will be sent to a court for a judge to consider. And you got to understand that he's a British citizen, so the chances of Spain extraditing him for this, if he goes back to Britain, which he probably is already, is probably pretty slim. But the article obviously mentions he's retired from boxing. Retired in 2012. He now works as a promoter but has a turbulent private life. He's been living apart from a woman who he has two daughters with. And like I said, he's got pictures of himself with girls with no bras on at this Spanish island that all this happened at. He's officially denied being involved in it, period. Obviously we'll be waiting for the courts to decide whether he is criminally liable for this whole thing. But that's pretty much the biggest news of the week. We also have a pretty interesting story about BJ Penn. He is going to be returning for Fight Night Manila 2. And he's going to be fighting Ricardo Lamas in a featherweight bite. The main event of your UFC Fight Night in Manila. And I don't have the exact date in front of me here. I guess it's... see. Well, I don't see the date. So, stay tuned on that. But UFC, whenever UFC goes to Manila, we're going to see that fight. And we lost Tom and Tony a little while back, and I got a spotty connection, so we're going to just call it a show. Thanks for stopping by, and until next week, as Tom would say, enjoy the fights.